What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and today we're going to talk about lessons that we learned from 2025. And I thought about this. I said, who really dives in with rankings with me the best? And I went through my entire Rolodex, and I couldn't find anybody.
The whole Rolodex.
You know, it's on my wrist, actually. I just spin it on my wrist and carry it with me like a cuff, you know? And I just all of a sudden landed on Eno Saris. And I thought, you know what? That's the guy.
Oh, man, what a surprise.
Wow. Thank you so much for joining me today as a professional guest, Eno Saris.
Yeah, good to be here. And I'm excited. I mean, the fun thing is the real baseball stuff is pretty exciting right now. I mean, Hunter Green against Paul Skeens with you know, stuff on the line, you know, that's exciting. Jonah Tong is pitching a huge game for the Mets. You know,
the Guardians and Tigers. Are you kidding?
Flaherty against Bybee versus Jeff
Flaherty today. Oh my gosh!
Oh my gosh! Yeah, it really is. It's going to be a fun day for the quad box tonight.
And I mean, yesterday even Gavin Williams and Derek Skubal was just unreal. And
I guess I got that Gavin Williams call right, which is so weird because there were definitely times this year I was like, you're getting this one wrong.
Oh, I know. That's how I felt. I felt actually the entire year. In fact, year, I have it was just so frustrating.
A lesson to learn that kind of goes counter to my Williams call.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of things we want to review just about, you know, I think this is probably my favorite thing to do at the end of the year is really actually take some time to look at my biases, look at the ranks I had in March. I have one from the 24th of March, right before opening day, where I see, okay, you have the guys that you kind of labeled there as that is the one I want to go for or not. And figuring out, oh, that's why that wasn't good. This is where I messed up here. So I'm really excited to hear that also from your end as well. And we have a long list of things, of different topics to go for. So, you know, I want you to kind of take it away with what you think is the easiest one for this year. And the second you mentioned before, I was like, yes, that makes all the sense.
Yeah. So this is dedicated to, who should I dedicate it to? It's dedicated to Sandy Alcantara.
And I was going to say Spencer Strider. Okay.
Yes. But the rule
is the
new rule that I will be instituting, and this will be pretty much a hard rule. I think once I read the names, I think you might agree. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to draft. I mean, I guess if they were cheap enough, I might draft them. But I'm not going to rank these players highly.
Yes.
Players that have coming off of TJ and have not pitched at all the season before. So if you think of Matt Boyd returning this year, he pitched last year.
Yeah.
If you think of Jake DeGrom returning well this year, he pitched last year.
Three starts.
The pitchers that did not pitch at all last year and return this year are Sandy Alcantara, Yuri Perez, Johan Oviedo, Shane Bieber, Kyle Bradish. Those are some of the good ones. John Means. What is that word? Alec Manoah, Felix Bautista, Tony Gonsolin, Shane McClanahan, Dustin May, and Shohei Ohtani. So, and Shohei is not one of those ones you would have wanted to rank that highly to begin the season anyway, because he wasn't going to be available near the beginning of the season.
Right.
So, you know, what I've suggested here is that I would miss out on Bieber's couple of starts and Bradish's couple of starts. I would miss out on Yuri and Sandy Alcantara if it meant missing out on this whole group. You know what I mean? Like, not completely investing highly in this whole group. And I didn't invest super highly, but I had like two or three Felix Bautista shares. I know he's a reliever, but you know, I had two or three Felix Bautista shares just thinking, you know, he's a reliever. He doesn't have to worry about command as much coming back. You know, he's throwing fine in spring. I'm all in. That didn't work out so well. And I think to me, this really cemented with Yuri Perez recently.
Oh, interesting.
Because I got yelled at in a recent ranking for, I didn't actually figure out from the person if I had him too low or too high, but it was ridiculous, whatever it was.
I was assuming one where Aaron says it's ridiculous and you don't know which way.
I argued both ways back and I was like, too high and too low, right. You know? And basically, I think what's turned out is like, he's been fine. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to miss this. I mean, it's a 4.20 ERA in 90 innings. Yes, good strikeout rates. Yes, he should have deserved a little bit better. But I think the command that that players are missing when they come back from the first year of Tommy John can manifest in a lot of different ways. So it's not just the walk rate. His home run rate is fairly high, you know? And his strand rate is low. So I'm saying that to some extent, this was even more of an eye-opener. Sandy was the big eye-opener, where it's just like, oh, he can have all his pitches, and the velo can be mostly there, and a couple of them can be just a little bit worse, and the command on the breaking ball just might not be there. Right. So, you know, I'll be back in on a lot of these. It's not like a do not draft going forward. In fact, I think I may have a very aggressive rank on Yuri next year, Bradish. He came back and showed us that he's good, you know?
Shane Bieber.
Like, I think I'll be in on these guys next year, but, you know, the list that this applies to next year. And so these are the relevant, the first two, I think the most relevant, because they may be ready to begin the season and we may hear about them in the spring. And there may be some excitement about these two guys in the spring.
From me, yeah.
And I may have them lower than you expect. When you look at my Joe Musgrove and Gerrit Cole rankings next year, they may be lower than the group.
Yeah, absolutely.
Over the rest of the season, of course, we're going to get Braxton Garrett back, Steele, Jay Montgomery, Corbin Burns, Hayden Wesnitzki, Jackson Jobe, AJ Smith-Shawver. Again, when they are coming back, I may just have a lower rank than you expect. You may think, you know, hey, Corbin Burns is coming back. He's throwing blah, blah, blah. He's great in the minor leagues. And I'll be like, sure. He's still like a 60 for me until he comes up and shows me he's better, you know?
Absolutely. A lot of things there that I just completely agree with. And one thing I do want to mention for everybody listening is, hey, didn't you hear Spencer Strider in that first thing? That's because he did pitch at the very beginning of the year of 2024, and then
after his surgery,
right? And so that's a big distinction too, I believe, that you're making, is that
I want them to after the surgery
in September, essentially. If they're not pitching in September, then I'm like, well, we don't care. And there's also, I imagine, you're adding in internal brace to this as well.
I think so, I'm just lumping them together.
I mean,
I think the thing is that what we see is that breaking ball, and it may be the fault of teams, because teams, you know, tell pitchers to stop throwing breaking balls. And I have talked to people who do rehab for a living, who are rehab, you know, professionals, and some of them disagree with the group that says don't throw the breaking ball till later. I mean, that's the surgeons say that. They say, oh, the breaking ball is putting stress on your elbow, don't throw it till later. A lot of the rehab specialists say, if you want to throw your breaking ball 88 miles an hour later when you're throwing your fastball 97, why not throw your breaking ball now when it's 84 and ramp up to 88? Yeah. Just like you ramp up from your 89, 90 mile hour fastball up to your 94, 95, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but just assuming the status quo on a lot of this stuff, just think Musgrove and Cole need to command their sliders for their arsenals to work. Musgrove especially. So if there's any sort of doubt about Musgrove's slider command, then, you know, I think you think a lot less of him as a pitcher.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's also, I mean, with Joe Musgrove, was in this weird position that kind of ties into one of my biggest lessons, which is really about, I had the right idea in the preseason, but I went after the wrong tier of it, is what I'm trying to get at. And not to move on from the point you're making about injured arms, I want to make sure I get back to it, because I actually have a list of those who were injured to start the year just in general. And I think that's a fantastic list of just kind of like, all right, what happened here and what we can learn from that. But I do want to mention that I have ran down, I still can't trust the quote unquote elite volume arms. And I think this is kind of what you're saying too. You have something that I'm just going to say again, grouping it together a bit, like, don't rank the boring guys too high. And the concept of that to me is, I went into the season saying, look, the guys I want are the ones who are strikeout an inning, who are going to go 180 innings and like a 3.5-ish ERA, like good ratios, not the most strikeouts and 180 inning type pitchers. So if I'm actually looking at those in my rankings that had that, you could say it would be your Corbin Burns, Max Fried, Michael King, Pablo Lopez, Tanner Bibee, Shota Imanaga, Justin Steele, Logan Webb, Bryce Miller, Framber Valdez, and you can kind of tell, like, wait, hold on a second, Luis Castillo, Aaron Nola.
That didn't work out so well.
Want to go for, right?
It's not the greatest tier. That's not the greatest group you put together.
So it's really, hey, Max Fried, that worked out all right. But
he's probably the least boring out of all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is also another element to him that I think is just like, he has what I'm calling the cauldron now. I'm calling them witchers. They put a spell on batters with their cauldron of pitches instead of the kitchen sink. I'm just done with the kitchen sink. I don't know if I should hyphen it or not. I don't want to write the word anymore. So I'm calling the cauldron. And long story short to me is, okay, hold on. Instead of going for those ones that have to be either A, get the volume, or B, have the ratios, because the strikeouts are not going to be that thing that saves them and salvages it, I'll rather go for the what I've called low-end hollies that I've really pushed down too much in my drafts. Because the thing is, your Merrill Kelly worked out, your Nathan Eovaldi really worked out, your Matthew Boyd worked out. For a while, Seth Lugo worked out again. And I'm realizing, wait, hold on a second. If you have these arms that can go six innings and go 180 innings, and they are still a little bit above 20% strikeout rate, sure, they're not like the historical ones, I guess, with a bigger name, but there is a definitive grouping or separation of those two. And I'm realizing it's just as valuable to hit on that as it is the young, exciting, electric, you know, cherry bomb kind of arms.
Yeah, and at the top end.
Right.
Yeah. And at the top end, what you find is that none of the guys that you mentioned made the top 10. And right. Only one of the guys you mentioned in the first group made the top 15. That was Max Fried, as I pointed out. Mm-hmm. And when you started talking about Boyd and Eovaldi and Kelly, Merrill Kelly, they all ranked ahead of Logan Webb, which is a little bit mind blowing for me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, I thought that a decent strategy would be to get a high end pitcher and pair them with Logan Webb. Mm-hmm. The place that I did the best, though, was where I took Logan Webb as my third pitcher. And I went, that's the my TGFBI league where I went Crochet, DeGrom, Logan Webb.
Right.
And why does that work out? Because Crochet was the third best pitcher, DeGrom was the 13th best pitcher, and Logan Webb was the 31st best pitcher. But in my rankings, I had Logan Webb in my top 15, and that's why I took him. And so that was something I should have noticed, that strikeout rate matters. Strikeouts are a category. Strikeouts, if you get a guy who's only going to strike out 21, 22% of the batters he sees, you're going to be falling behind every time in just a little way. It's not always really obvious, you know, and just be falling behind a little bit. And so in a way, what you could say is, I think what I'm hearing from you is, you can push up some of those boring guys that will have a 22% strikeout rate and may get a bunch of innings and have accomplished arsenals, right? Kelly, Eovaldi's,
right.
Push those up a little bit, but push down the guys that are like them at the top.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm assessing the, like, for example, Christopher Sanchez
was 53rd. Someone that got
underrated, right? I am at 37. I wanted to push him higher, but I really couldn't. I mean, I even look at my tier six, which was Christopher Sanchez, Sonny Gray, some guy I refused to acknowledge that I messed up so badly on, that is on the Astros. And I debated you with him, and I massive props to Eno Saris for being like, Hunter Brown is my 15th starter or whatever it is.
And well, he's boring, but he's not as boring as the other guys.
Absolutely not. Right. Yeah. It's like he has 97.
And right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's a huge difference. And then there's also Zach Gallen in there and Seth Lugo. And actually, that was a low man on Zach Gallen at 40. I was just like, I can't do this. And you know, my whole point of that is like that was like your SP4 and your 12 teamer. Carlos Rodon was also kind of down there too. And as a way of like, he's going to get you volume. There was more ratio question with the cost of strikeouts. It's kind of interesting, but same kind of mold in a way.
It's a question of like upside and floor and like
the
correct relationship in your rankings. Yeah.
So for me, really, it's just kind of sitting down and assessing like, all right, who are like the veterans who just are in good situations? A good thing to note that the Cubs had an amazing defense behind them. And Jameson Taillon, super effective this year. Later on, even though he got injured along the way, very, very good there. Cade Horton, part of the reason why he has his success is because of that defense and that situation, wins, and of course, defense. Like that should be paramount in our decision making. As much as we want to predict defense, it can be very hard, but there are some I imagine that we can entering next year to say, like, yes, this will be a bad defense behind you, which also hurt Eury Pérez and Sandy Alcantara. And I need to take that into account, right? So, I mean, that's really what I'm going for. I'll mention the other side of that coin in another point with the what to look for in your breakout starters a little bit better. In your,
I have one that sort of hangs off of that. That is,
sure.
I think just generally, I have a question of like boring too high. Now, that's, I think, a weird thing to come off of. You just said maybe boring at the bottom should be higher and boring at the top should be lower.
It's all like they're like 150 to 200 is where they should live.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I have boring too high. I have Gallen, Savali, Tobias Myers, Walker Buehler, Jose Berrios, Bailey Ober. This is just something I struggle with every year because there's always the end of the year. The guys that Eovaldi is the fifth best pitcher this year.
Man, that's so cool.
I think, you know, I think Rogers kind of counts. Trevor Rogers 14th best by the Fangraphs player writer.
Trevor Rogers got the 14th best. Is that right?
That's what this
player. That's incredible. Says. Like, how many starts did he make? 18 or something?
Yeah. Matthew Boyd ended up 21st for one of the real good guys in the game. Merrill Kelly, 28th. I think Ranger Suarez is maybe the patron saint of boring, wide Arsenal guys. So those are good. I think what I'm trying to hone in on is just boring good versus boring bad. Mm. And also preseason versus in season. I think I still want to preseason hew closer to guys that have stuff because stuff is stickier year to year.
Yes.
You know, I think the line between like a Nady Evaldi and Zach Gallen, I think is razor thin.
Yeah. Well, I think that is exactly the reason why I'm saying what I'm saying of, okay, don't go after the ones at the top that cost something.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And then maybe I shouldn't
beat myself up over these because none of these guys, I was not that high on any of them. So should I be bad? What did I have Gallen at? I had Gallen
at 40. Yeah.
I had 41. Yeah.
Yeah. 40. Oh, look at you, you know. But you had injured guys in there too. Okay. All right. I didn't. Just messing around. I do want to make the point though, that because it's razor thin, it means that those that I've been ranking too low have a higher chance than I'm giving them credit to be better, right? And I've been favoring too much of that shiny squirrel stuff upside, overlooking the sustainability and the possibility of some of these, I say, don't draft Tobies, of actually coming through. And the perfect example of that is my tier 11. And I'm not saying that all these hit. I am saying that you can make a quick decision too if it doesn't hit. So Zach Eflin, Tanner Houck, David Peterson, Nick Martinez, Nestor Cortez, terrible start to this tier. This is 71 through 75, keep in mind. But then it's Matthew Boyd, Merrill Kelly. Brady Singer had a solid year. Michael Wacha was fine for a while. Luis Severino, Jose Soriano, Jose Barrios, and Brandon Font. And that, you see right in the middle of that, there is...
How can you, like, if we could be better at that
one, right?
If we could be better at that group.
Exactly. So that is the... That's the intrigue for me. Like, how do we separate this better? And looking back, okay, Zach Eflin, injuries really got him. So fine. Tanner Houck, we had a lot of conversations about it. I felt like I pushed him down as far as I could, given the consensus, and I should just be more aggressive, and that's stupid. I should just be more aggressive. Who cares? David Peterson, massive extension boy, was good for a bit, to be fair. Nick Martinez, yeah. I should have been like, come on. I regret the Nick Martinez. Okay. Nestor Cortez, didn't know, but that was injury. So there's a good way to get.
I think that sometimes there's like injury notes that didn't turn into injury stints that we should remember. Like,
yeah,
Nestor Cortez did have like flexor issues last year.
Right. Then it's Boyd, Kelly, Singer, Wacha, Severino, Sacra Verde. Okay. Sacramento. It stinks. Bad place to pitch. Don't do that.
50 ERA at home. 305 on the road.
Jose Soriano. I knew he was a hipster. I knew he was a guy that goes back and forth. Why would I don't want it. Jose Barrios. You know me and Jose Barrios. I know this. We know this. We all know this.
Yeah.
Brandon Fott's the interesting one because Brandon Fott throughout the entire season was changing what he does. And that one, I'm still okay with where I placed him. I was still out on him. And I told a lot of people like, okay, everyone wants him as their breakout guy. And like, I just didn't buy it.
I had him too high. I'm 48.
So, but I
that
still
would be boring too high for me, actually. That's boring too high.
Yeah, that is boring too high. I would imagine as well. But like, but that one, I'm putting that like around Boyd and Kelly. I think that's the most likable one of the ones that didn't work out. Right. And most understanding ones. So, I mean, those are the real takeaways for me on that. And it's, and look, you know, I'm putting out my top 200 for next year in about a week. So
take a little time after that.
No. That, the whole point of it is that I can take a time off at my time off after. I need the freshness of the season to be like, done. Here you guys go for the next like 4 months. You know, you're going to look it up and stuff. It's there. All right. I got to do other things. So you'll see that next week. I'll figure something out with it and we'll have our. Hopefully you can have some preliminary like draft of the top 100 we can discuss to kick off the offseason, and then we'll disperse and take our breaks. We'll leave you guys with that. And we'll also leave you guys with that comment before I go back to really reviewing the injured starters that I had notes on before the start of next year, and you'd be surprised to see that list, and we'll talk about that after this break. Okay, so you know, I alluded to this earlier. I need to go through this list. This is just, if you want one thing to take away from this podcast, you know, it's exactly this, all right? These are the ones that I did not have ranked because I knew they would be on the IL entering the year, okay? Like in some way, they're just like, I got rid of them from my top 100. So, Spencer Strider, Shane McClanahan, George Kirby, Shohei Ohtani, Lucas Giolito, who did eventually turn into his thing, but it didn't look like that early, and it wasn't like worth the massive stash. It took longer to come back, right? Brandon Woodruff. That's a weird one. And it's weird because they gave him extra time due to his own fault. And he talks endlessly about how that extra month because of his ankle saved him, which is a really interesting point. And I wish a lot of teams... I don't listen to that. Maybe that's like why some of those good cases happen. Some bad ones happen. Like, do you remember Spencer Strider when he came up earlier than expected this year? He was rushed.
Yeah.
AJ Smith-Shawver went down. And then the Atlanta wasn't doing well. So they're like, all right, we got to bring up Strider. And it makes me wonder if that had some impact with it. I don't know. I'm going to keep going with the list here. Yu Darvish, which took forever. Jared Jones. We all know how that went. Grayson Rodriguez, never saw him. Yuri Perez, eventually find Sawyer Gibson Long, who I don't know who that is. Kyle Bradish, Cutter Crawford, Brian Bayo, Clark Schmidt, Ranger Suarez was on the IL. Okay, fine. Cody Bradford, Shane Bieber, Luis Gil, Sean Manaea, Christian Javier, Ryan Weathers, and Tobias Myers. I would say that Ranger Suarez is really the only one who came through at wherever you drafted him. Not saying that like was the only one who was helpful, but just where you drafted him. Because Kyle Bradish and Brian Bayo and Yuri Perez and all that, those are last round stashes. Most people in your 12-teamers, you picked them up off the wire because they were just an IL stash for so long. So it's really just Ranger Suarez. That's kind of wild.
It is wild.
So are you just like avoiding anyone with an injury tag to start the year next year?
Yes. It is funny because we put that up against great seasons from Garrett Crochet and Jake DeGrom. But, you know, within this framework that we're creating, they were healthy to begin the season.
Right.
I've heard some feel like, oh, we need to just put away injury analysis. And I can't go there yet. I have to think about things through the lens of like probabilities. Blake Snell was still injured this year. You know right. what I mean? Tyler Glasnow was still injured this year.
Yeah.
So there's still a lot of players who are injury prone pitchers in particular. And so I'm not going to leave that out of my analysis, but injured to start the year. I think I am adopting your strategy of not even ranking them. And in the preseason, if they already have an injury note, maybe that's enough to pull them off of the ranking and put them into the separate pitcher, injured pitcher ranking.
You know? Yeah.
And in that case, you know, I think that the approximate ranks that I put next to them won't necessarily be where do I think that they would rank if they were fully healthy?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to give people the sense, oh, this guy has a flexor strain, you know, or he has a flexor injury note right now, but Eno would still rank him, you know, 20th if he's fully healthy. So I'm now going to take him, you know, as the 30th ranked pitcher, because I don't know if that's baking in enough risk,
right? You know?
So I think what my approximate ranking will be. Where they might debut on the list.
You know, you could just do what I did. I have two columns, drafting tier and then tier of healthy. So then you get
that's both of the ideas. What their upside is if they're healthy and
yeah. So it just gives you the guidance of like, all right, like I had last round IL stash for a lot of these guys, like everyone except for five of them. You know, and everyone else is like, all right, your drafting tier is this tier and this tier and that tier and so on. And tier of healthy is this one, right? I mean, I totally missed it on Strider. Jeez. But yeah, that is something to really take into consideration heavily. And it really means that I'm staying away from Gerrit Cole. I don't know where he's going to go. There's going to be hoopla of some kind, I'm sure. Entering next year. I mean, is there another major name outside of him and Joe Musgrove for next year that I missed it if you said them before?
Gerrit Cole, Joe Musgrove, Steele.
Oh, Justin Steele. Right. I mean, I guess these are more like the Bradish and Bieber a little bit. Like Jared Jones would be in there too. Of like
when they're going to come back.
Yeah, right.
Oh, Jones. Yeah, Jared Jones. Yeah. I think there's an outside chance that Musgrove is ready for the beginning of the season.
Oh, sure. We did find out about that one. That was like a November TJS or something, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I'm not interested because he's not like an overpowering one. He's not like,
yeah, I think that'll be rough for me because the command is really important and we just don't know what that'll be.
Absolutely. Even when he had his command, it was still like 22% striker rate or something like that. Okay, we're going to shift away from injured talk because we've nailed that one. We got it. All right. Was there another lesson that you learned this year, you know, that you want to talk about?
Well, I continue to try to dial in my relationship between stuff and command and try to understand that best. I was tempted to say, you know, what I have here circled is should I value location plus more? And the reason I have that is that, you know, if I just sort my latest rankings from August by location plus, and then look at, you know, which ones I was low on to begin the season.
Sure.
You know, some stand out. Like, for as much as Nick Pivetta's stuff, you know, didn't the updates to the model didn't like it as much. It's like a 99 stuff plus for the year. It's still pretty good stuff for a starter. He had a 111 location plus this year. And I had him ranked at 55 to begin the season. Another player that had really good stuff last season that I was a little low on is Matthew Boyd. Another one is Nathan Eovaldi, not so surprising. Trevor Rogers has a good stuff location plus. Brandon Woodruff, when he came back, not great stuff plus, but great location plus. Merrill Kelly, always great location plus. So I'm like, could this be my blind eye that I'm missing? Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know, this is what I'm doing right now here. This is really looking at in-season location plus and misses. I need to look back at last year's location plus preseason ranks, mm-hmm. right? And so what I took was every pitcher that was projected for more than 100 innings, and I just ranked them by their location plus.
Okay.
Pablo Lopez, Nick Martinez, Eric Fetty. Those are my top three.
Oh boy.
I haven't missed anything yet. Paul Skeens is fourth. I did not rank Paul Skeens poorly. Chris Sale is fifth. George Kirby is sixth. Imanaga, I might have been a little low on this year. He's been not as good in the second half. And Kikuchi had a good location plus.
I'm not surprised by that. It's chaos inside the zone.
We've talked
about this. You know, this is a huge thing to me. Of you'll see guys with, if you don't know this about me, I'm very much on 60% or higher on strike rates. And essentially, if you have all your pitches above a 60% strike rate, you should be great when it comes to not walking guys, right? Except for a lot of young arms who have control. Like Joe Boyle walks four guys and he had 60% strikes in all three pitches because they lose batters. And they're not actually like good, you know, command arms, but they just find enough pitches in the zone, right? Which Cowboys means that you're going
to throw good stuff to the heart of the zone, right?
If you just have, just probability speaking, if you're like 6-for-10 or something like that, you should not, you know, you should have a lot of them fine, but then you're going to have the times where it's like multiple 4-over-10s, right? Like that's why Kikuchi probably stands out in that one, right? Where like location plus is very much like, cool, yeah, you generally throw in the zone. That's good.
I might have missed on Kikuchi, but I don't think it's because of location plus. So I don't really have a person here that I should have ranked higher. I'm going to go further. Ranger Suarez, maybe I should have ranked him higher, and maybe based on, you know, consistent location plus. That's the other mm-hmm. thing, consistent location plus year to year. Merrill Kelly has that. Eovaldi has that. So I can't just do a pop-up guy. You know, Eflin had a good location plus. Miles Michaelis, Zach Littell, Brian Bayo, Andrew Haney, Joey Estes. Like, yeah. At least what I'm not finding is a pattern where it's like, dude, you ranked all these guys too low.
Right.
You know, there's a couple guys in here. I'm like, oh, okay. So I have to refine it. I think location plus is this. Five starts into the season, and maybe that's too late,
mm-hmm.
but five starts into the season, if I've got a boring veteran that's playing really well and has a good location plus, I should just believe it better.
What about three? So five starts.
Three, that might be the toggle because that's quicker, but
yeah.
It's supposedly pitching plus location plus supposedly comes online at like 400 pitches.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, how about this though? You pick him up after three and hopefully it's still there after two more.
But we're also talking about ranking lessons.
Oh yeah, so right. Sure, right.
Maybe after one, I bump them already a little bit.
If yeah, it's a good location, I mean, that's the Nick Pollock method. You make small bumps, and so
small bumps. Yeah.
And everyone gets upset at that. Oh, it's just money. I'm like, I know, but you don't want me to go like plus 30 slots or something. Like, at what point do I do it? You know,
if a guy has like a 90 stuff plus, and in his first game, he has like a 115 location.
Yeah, right. You got to do something about it.
I can maybe bump him a little bit, but I can't bump him 30 spots. He might still just be a 90 stuff plus guy that had one good game and the next game is bad, you know?
But you still need to put in now there's a higher probability of him not being a 90 stuff plus, right? Like than there was before because you just did this thing. Okay.
Yeah.
There's some higher chance now. That's all. But you're not saying he's a 115 stuff plus now, right? It's hard. It's ranking. It's impossible. These are humans we're talking about. This is not.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's fascinating about location plus, and I think it really leans into, you know, actually, I love this. I love looking back at this and saying, okay, cool. Let's just look at the groupings I had, and wait, who worked and who didn't. My tier 8 from last year, which is 49 through 56. Okay. You have Richard Fitz and Max Meyer leading that off, which is kind of hilarious. Both guys that like showcase this really amazing skill in spring. And we're just like, you know what? This is the point of like, you drop them or not. Early decision stuff, totally. And did not work, right? Not veterans, not these long volume guys, you know. Max Meyer was looking kind of cool at first, but then it wasn't. He was hurt. Fine. Yusei Kikuchi was here at 51, which was, I think, low for Kikuchi. I was not a believer of last year. And he's, you know, all that kind of stuff. Let's just move that aside. Spencer Arrighetti and Reese Olsen, who I kept pairing together a lot. Arrighetti was just eventually hurt, and Reese Olsen was good and was kind of like the guy to target, and then he was hurt, right? Like, he was the exact kind of mold we're looking for of a young arm. And then it's Nick Lodolo and Nick Pivetta. And I'm like, there it is. That's, you know, those are guys that are, I mean, with Nick Pivetta, it's like, okay, you have this volume, you have that strikeout potential, and it's possible now that you have a full season as a starter that you just kind of lock into this. Pivetta moving to San Diego is a much better situation for him. At the same time, you know, I don't know what to do about the deadened ball. Like, a lot of these guys are about lower home runs.
Yeah.
That's it. Matthew Boyd.
What happens with the ball next year?
Right, it's got to have more home runs, because this was like
home run rate is the largest source of noise in a pitcher's arsenal in terms of statistics.
It's thanks MLB, we love you. Oh man, no. So that was a big deal with Pivetta, big deal with Boyd, and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, all right, those are the ones who are able to go every 5 days, and they're allowed to go six innings, and they have strikeout ability, and we don't think that they're absolute chaos. Right? Like, yeah, Pivetta in his home run rate has been fine. Lodolo has been on and off, but he's been hurt. Like, this was the first time we saw extended period of time for both of them really in the rotation, getting regular starts, and they both succeeded, right? So that's something that I am really registering from this. And then there's Shane Baz, and I'm like, oh, I didn't realize how terrible it would be in George Steinbrenner Field. People warned me, and I didn't listen. So
yeah, I mean, yeah. I thought that maybe some of the guys at the top would just be good enough, because we do have good guys who pitch well in Yankee Stadium and guys who pitch well in Cincinnati. So I thought, you know, even if it's on that level, like, and for what it's worth, Pepio for 5 months of the season was a good rank for me. The last month has, I think, been fatigue plus that park and next year I will probably be a little bit higher than consensus on Boz.
We will both be in.
Yeah.
Pepio and Boz. You've convinced me too of just like, I mean, you told me the quote that he had of just, yeah, I miss Tropicana. You know, I want it's like the pitching lab in there. It's exactly what you want it to be.
Yeah.
I'm sold. I'm absolutely sold there. This does really go to the whole larger point of, okay, what, you know, I went and chased these guys because I'm like, look, I can just burn and churn. I'm going to go for these things. And so few of them really panned out in the way that we wanted them to. There are the ones that are like Gavin Williams, as we were saying before, like, okay, but that's not really like the young one. It was more of like, this guy's going to go, you know, the possibility of 160 plus innings, of 180 innings. Like, we feel okay with that. It's not like a young guy trying to prove himself. Drew Rasmussen, we knew the skills were really good, and the big worry was how the Rays would use him, but it kind of was fine. Like, we were pretty happy with Rasmussen throughout the year, despite, you know, he went from 4 innings to 5 innings to 6 innings, now to 5 innings, but that was fine because the skills are really good, and we knew that he'd be able to get that chance every 5 days, right? So that's really the bigger takeaway I have with this of, yeah, there are all those exciting things, like there's Jack Leiter, and then there's Taj Bradley, and Ronaldo Lopez, and Landon Roop, and Jesus Luzardo, and there's one too, Jesus Luzardo. Not a young, weird one. Like, that was a new home for a veteran, right? Like, something might change, and whatever, that should be something I lean into more. That's a big takeaway there. Just not the Richard Fitz and Max Meyer. The guy's never done anything. I can't do.
I mean, I have Mitch Keller next to Landon Roop at 1881 in March.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks a lot to what you're saying. It's like Landon Roop had done nothing. Mitch Keller, you know, consistently puts up innings.
Right.
Mitch Keller's pretty boring. Landon Roop could have been better.
Okay. So are you saying it's good for Keller then? Or good to draft Roop then?
I'm just saying that's a really difficult part of the schedule, because that's 80, like 70 to 100 is mm-hmm. where I want to put my sleepers.
Right.
I want to say, hey, this is a great place to take a shot on somebody.
Absolutely. So, completely.
You know, I remember, you know, I put Jose Soriano 72,
mm-hmm.
and that was ahead of consensus. What's weird is, I want to look this up now. Let me see where he actually ended up.
Yeah. Just to that point, I will say Keller hasn't done it yet, in my view. Like, what I'm saying with Luzardo or with Pivetta, these guys have actually been good in the past. Yeah, I don't think that Keller is worthwhile for a 12 teamer, right?
Oh, no. Soriano was 164.
Okay.
So let's see what Keller was. Keller was 145. So, I mean, basically a miss. And one thing I would say is don't be too harsh on yourself, because what we're saying is, in these ranks, these are your final guys that you're taking shots on.
Right.
They are cheap for a reason. They either haven't done it, you know, or they have flaws, and that's why they're down here. I did pretty poorly in this area. You know, I'm glad I had Ranger Suarez clear of this at 64, but in 70 plus, it was Gore, Soriano, Darvish, Otani, Manaea. I was trying to sprinkle in veterans. Oh,
you just threw all the injured guys in here. That's what happened.
Yeah, that's the veteran. Yeah, totally. That's the injured tier. And then after the injured tier, I put more long shot veterans and some of my real sleepers. So Savali and Keller, boring guys that I had projected for like 150 innings, you know. Then Landon Roop and David Peterson, way too low on Peterson. Dustin May, Will Warren and Landon Roop were some of my guys I had profiled as good sleepers. This is where I decided I would put them. Sean Burke is at 90, Edward Cabrera at 94, Casey Mize at 96, and Matthew Boyd at 98. Okay, I'm going to give myself like a B minus on this group, I think. Because what do you think the hit rate should be on 70?
Right, well, that's the thing, right? Is to me especially, like, I don't expect to have anybody inside or outside like the top 75 for my 12 teamers personally. And you're saying, right, Nick, hold on a second. In 12 teamers, if you have 7 starters each, eight starters each, then that's like 96 starters. Like, how could you do that? Because a lot of people are going to
get the better ones.
They're going to draft ones that I'm not going to touch. You know, like, I'm like, okay, take your Miles Michaelis, buddy. All right, have a good time.
Even with the 96 number, all those guys that I just said should be, you should have two of them, you know, for your final two guys. And even if you did the worst you could do of those two, which is Aaron Civale and Walker Buehler,
mm-hmm.
guess how long they're on your roster?
Yeah, they're not sticking around.
So yeah,
that's the whole idea of it, is like the quick decision stuff, right?
But you know, for me, maybe the lesson also is, why even bother putting Savoy on there? Because, you know, he's probably like that. That's a 15 team play. You know, that's a depth guy. You know, why have Savali and Keller there? That's too high for them, actually. You know, so I need to dial in a little bit. Like, and I think taking injury guys out will help, because you heard in the middle of my sleeper, you know, tier were a bunch of injured guys.
Right.
Now, if I take those out, what it becomes way more clear to me what, you know, what's happening, you know. And I really liked it when I took the injured guys out this last August.
I'm glad
I
think that you're embracing Rankers that.
Did too.
You know, we deserve a little bit of luxury. Okay.
Well, it's just easier to see if you don't have a name like Yu Darvish or Shohei Ohtani in the middle of your Jose Soriano, you're like,
what are they doing
Mitch
here?
Keller. Yeah. And to be honest, like, you can't put Ohtani higher because you have no idea how many innings he'll pitch at all, any, you know. And that's actually for Yu Darvish. I was just as worried that Yu Darvish, you know, like, I still to this day think that Yu Darvish could be done anytime. So, you know, ranking him is just really difficult, especially if he is injured at the time of the ranking. So, you know, I think you got to just, you got to take him out. And then it becomes a little bit clearer where you're like, okay, now I'm comparing Mackenzie Gore and Jose Soriano to Aaron Savali and Mitch Keller. That's easy. I'll take Gore and Soriano just in case they work out. Okay, now I'm comparing Savali and Keller to Roop and Peterson. That should be easy. Roop and Peterson in case they work out, right? So I can push these guys higher, you know, and get some of my sleepers higher. And like, I should really just have like a Mitch Keller line. Mitch Keller should be like
the Mendoza line for you. Like,
he should be like the 125th pitcher in my rankings every year. Just that's be like a guy that can go in, you know, draft and hold should probably have a Mitch Keller's, because he's at home, he's okay. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy who will give you innings, and, you know, but so, you know, there's some sort of line there that does bring me to
a point that I actually meant to write down and I didn't discuss, and we don't have to go into it much now. It is about players shifting scenery and new clubs. And that is such a big narrative in the offseason and preseason. We think this guy going to this place, now all of a sudden they're a different pitcher. Oh, this is a worse place. This is a better place. I do want to hone in on that a little bit as we end this podcast. But before we do, we have to take a quick break. So, okay, work with me here a little bit. I'm trying to remember the major shifts of pitchers entering last season, of just the guys that are had this new environment, and we are
Luzardo to Philly.
Luzardo to Philly is one. That's away from Miami and to Philly, which we think, I mean, it's a better winning club. And I like to think that's a better coaching staff as well.
I remember moving him up. I don't know when these rankings are. I just have them labeled as early ranks. Good job with the record keeping. I remember having, so here it says I have Lazar 61, but I remember that when they announced that he was like their second starter or something.
Yeah. Like they moved him up in the rotation for like that weekend for whatever reason.
For some reason, it clicked in me that they valued him, went and got him. They really believe in him.
Yeah.
And so I moved him up a little bit after that. Mm-hmm. But I was nervous about, you know, just his mistakes being punished more in Philly. So I that was one that stuck out for me, I guess, going in the wrong direction.
Sure. And then there's Garrett Crochet going to the Red Sox, which initially, I remember us in First Pitch Arizona, it was like, well, he wasn't traded yet. And then he was traded, and it wasn't necessarily seen as a good landing spot. We've had these conversations before where elite pitchers overcome whatever silly park factor essentially is affecting them.
And that's where I ended up. I think you did too. We both had him.
Yeah, we both were there with that one. I do want to mention
Pivetta.
I did, right, exactly. We brought up Pivetta before, and that is one that we can look at in retrospect. It's like, that's a beneficial one. The Holmes one, that's the whole reliever to starter conversation.
And
Holmes was exactly what we expected, kind of, right? It was like, this isn't that good, right? It was like, he should be fine.
He 91 on the year.
Yeah, it sounds, I mean, it got worse as the year went on.
Like, I overranked him then.
You had some value with him, the Adobe, but it just never felt right. It never felt like we are really thrilled and excited about this and unlocked a new potential or something. So it's always different. He's not Michael King, because Michael King like was a command guy. Like,
yeah, totally he's like a high whip ground ball guy.
Yeah. It's like Jordan Hicks. If Jordan Hicks got more innings.
Yes.
All right. I'm just going through a few more. I mean, Blake Snell to the Dodgers. It's the same thing. So, I mean, really, it's Blake Snell again, right? Not much different there.
Cortez, does that count?
Who?
Nestor Cortez?
Not really. It was just an injured season, right?
Well, he ended up in San Diego.
But right. No, I'm just saying, like,
he start lost in Milwaukee.
He never, that was a whole mess of.
Yeah, he was in Milwaukee to start. Okay. So
but it was, yeah. Very, very strange season for him. I feel weird kind of dissecting it because of that. But yeah, I guess there really weren't many.
Bueller was involved.
Bueller hoping to see the new scenery for him, but, you know, it didn't really work out. We did see Dustin
Boyder. Boyder in Chicago. I think that lefties.
In Chicago lefties is actually a really good one because that's a great defense behind him.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. Lefty home runs by righties are suppressed in Wrigley Field.
And home runs by lefties in Cleveland were inflated in 2024.
Mm.
Right? That's so, I mean, there's...
Maybe there was a lot of things pointing in Boyd's direction right there.
Right. So, I think really the main focus for me is just... We put so much emphasis on the coaching staff, I think. And sure, Miami to Philly, yes, better, but winning ball club not as winning ball club, right? I mean, that's the biggest change in my view there.
Who was unlocked by a new coach in a way that,
Beta?
You know, blew us all away, I guess, but there's a park factor there that,
yeah, like, I think so too. And it wasn't really like,
how
much
is
different
Pivetta doing differently, you know?
Yeah, like, not really.
Like Joe Boyle is very different mechanically.
Yeah. He has a splinker now.
And he's like lower arm slot. But like, is he different? Like, is he like better? I mean, I don't trust him.
Right. I'm the same way with you there.
I'm looking at the wrong list. Okay. Let me look at the auction calculator list. Guys who broke out.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the guys who broke out. I'm looking at all of them.
Christopher
Sanchez added velo.
Well, Brady Singer is another one who changed teams.
He added a cutter.
He did, and he added the cutter and the four-seamer emphasis actually earlier on that were bigger. And then it recently became slider and sweeper being separate as opposed to just sinker slider. And what's interesting is that the initial takeaway of Singer going to the Reds, well, you go from Kauffman to Great American Ballpark, right? But I think there is some weight to be put on the different coaching staff of the Royals versus the Reds. I mean, that's my interpretation. We gave Reagan's a lot of credit for being a Royal, which we know is not the case. It was Tread Athletics.
Right.
So there is some thought to that of should we be putting anything, like, are we putting too much weight on that ballpark change when it didn't really make a big impact for Brady Singer? I don't know.
You might like this one.
Okay.
You might like this one. So I'm looking at this list of players that broke. I'm just looking at the list of the best players by the auction calculator. And I'm looking through it and being like, who has the new pitch this year?
Yeah, it's a cutter, isn't it?
It's a cutter. It's not all a cutter. Okay, so I'm just really just reading through the list and being like, new pitch. So Trevor Rogers sweeper, yeah. 14. Yeah. So that means 1 through 13 largely did not add a new pitch.
That's a really good point.
They just all were just great before.
Right.
Do we say that Max Fried added a pitch?
He leaned into his cutter more. I mean, and yeah. I would also say that they maybe reclassified his four-seamer as a cutter.
Yeah, that's what happened. Like, I think he had
that make more sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, let's give him a cutter. All right. Trevor Rogers, sure. Sweeper, Max Fried, 15, cutter. Nope.
Should we not care about new pitches at all in the spring?
Nope. Oh, Logan Webb, 31, new
cutter.
Nope.
Yeah,
nope,
but the second half was
Gavin Williams, 35.
Well, hold on, you know. No. Yes, but no, but sinker, kind of. Sinker's really the one that stuck.
Okay, well, and they also maybe threw cutter before, but like, okay. I don't
the
know.
The Gavin Williams journey, Eno, that I have been on, yeah. All right, is ridiculous. It is just beginning of the season, four-seamer, sweeper, curveball. That's it. I'm banging the table. Where is the cutter?
And then he throws it too much.
He throws it, and it's a bad game. But the cutter was good. But everything else was terrible, right? And then it's like, okay, maybe he's throwing, still going the cutter a little bit more. Okay, maybe now the four-seamer's here, but also now the four-seamer, he's like 6.5 feet extension instead of 7+, and it's slower velocity. Like, what's going on? He's still kind of there, but he's not really figuring this out. He pulls back the cutter. He starts throwing a sinker now. And the sinker actually maybe works, but then the velocity goes down as fastball, and then the cutter returns. And it's like, what are you doing with every start? I do not know if you're just like, new thing each time. It's a canvas as the paint drips down and you have a new painting, right? Like, and now it's this dominant start against the Tigers yesterday was amazing command of his curveball to lefties, amazing command of his sweeper to righties, 97 with 7.1 feet of extension on the four seamer. And oh, I guess here's some sinkers. Oh, I guess here's like a few cutters. And I'm like, this is really just what you had.
Yeah, he really reduced the cutter usage again. That's interesting.
But I'm so happy he's done so well in like the last like 10 starts. All right, great.
I mean, yeah, that was a wild ride.
That was a journey.
I've got another one for you.
Oh yeah?
I'm all the way down to 47, by the way. So we're through the top 47
already. Yeah.
Pitchers, and we have four guys with new pitches. Brady Singer. New.
All right.
Cutter. New.
Cutter.
Cutter. Cutter. Brian Bayo, 51.
Oh, Bayo completely changed himself to like middle end of May. Like the middle end of May, he really
that was yeah, so it wasn't even a March new pitch thing.
You know? Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, no.
All right. Nope. Oh, well, this doesn't count because it wasn't March either. Hurston Waldrop is like a middle of season guy. By the way, Hurston Waldrop 56 at the end of the season.
Yeah, this is because the ERA, but like in a short, small sample, I'm not in on Waldrop next year at all. Oh, gosh, no. No. Even that game against the Nationals yesterday, he had good games, good stuff good results with the slider. They were all backed up front door to right-handers. Like none of them went away. And like, this is not going to work. 5-for-11, 5-for-12 whiffs on that. No.
Oh, I got a new one.
Hmm.
Edward Cabrera.
Yeah. Well, that's a cool one. But
sinker.
That took a while.
I guess he technically threw it before and it took a while.
So for Edward Cabrera, he was four seamer first. And that was always just such a low strike pitch. And it really goes to the whole thing I talk about with when you see a guy with a high walk rate, it's just like how Alex Chamberlain talked about, hey, Frankie Montas turned his sinker into a splitter. So thus he has more whiffs. Duh. Because splitters earn more whiffs. Sinkers don't.
Right.
And Eric Cabrera turned his four seamer that had like a 50 to 55% strike rate pitch. And then ate away at that, and then the sinker is now like a 65-70% pitch. Oh man, maybe he might walk.
I think it must just be his natural arm slot he's going back to or something. Like, you know, they tried to get him higher for the four seam or whatever, and then
it could be the changeup became the foundational pitch though, and that's important. And that was like a real, you know, a major change for him that led to success in lowering walks finally. Oh my gosh, took ages.
And I want to, and I'm hearing what I'm hearing from you, I think is an important distinction because I can say, you know, I went through the rest of them in my head here. And, you know, I can just say, you know, I got through 75 pitchers and we had like four new pitches, right? I could say that, and that could be a soundbite. And it could be like, we shouldn't care about new pitches.
Yeah.
However, the way you described Edward Cabrera's, like, and especially Gavin Williams, I don't want to suggest that means that these adjustments don't matter, or that the way that their arsenal fits together doesn't matter, or, you know, that I don't want to just become like maybe a projections absolutist or whatever it is. I don't want to say that this doesn't matter. I think that what I'm saying is a little bit more nuanced, is to say that, like, I think a new pitch out of nowhere is rare.
Yes.
You know,
right.
A pitch that they've taken and reshaped, or like even Gavin Williams' cutter, he's thrown a cutter before.
Yeah.
We could say that, I mean, you could call it semantics, but I would just say that, like, you know, especially beginning of spring, if they say I'm throwing a splitter and you're like, wow, he's never thrown a splitter before, the bar for us to believe that that'll be what makes them a great pitcher should be pretty high. Now, if they have a gyro and they're like, now it's a cutter, that could be everything that makes the difference for them.
Yeah.
But again, we should be interested in these changes they're making in the spring, but we shouldn't necessarily just be like, okay, that'll be it. You know, he just threw, you know, four innings of shutout ball against the Tigers in spring using a new splitter. Let me put him 30th on my
list. Right. Oh man. And to really, really emphasize this one more. I mean, we've talked about like Hunter Green throwing splitters. I call it the classic Tyler Glasnow changeup or Chris Archer changeup. You know, that's what I think about all the time with new pitches. Bryce Miller has leaned into splitters a little bit more, and that's nicer. But yeah, it's always about, you know, Eric Samulski did this in his first pitch Arizona presentation. He did it for PitchCon too, and you can watch it online on our YouTube channel. You should watch it. What does it mean adding a new pitch? Does it solve a problem? Is it something that is needed in some way? And most of the time, it's one of two things, guys. One, they need something that is not their fastball to throw a strike. Okay.
And I think that's the one I'm most interested in. That's new cutter, absolutely, new sinker. That's what
exactly
I want to hear.
That.
New cutter,
right,
new sinker.
And to me, sinker only really works well if they either have velocity or extension. If they don't, then it's too easy to adjust, right? But if you have a good extension, some means the tunnel is shorter, or they just throw hard enough, then like, okay, then it's just going to be really tough to do. Then we're cool. And then with a cutter, I think just like a cutter is just generally always good unless you just throw a bad cutter. So don't throw a bad cutter. But if you throw hard and you want a strike pitch, great. And the other scenario is if you don't have any whiff pitch and you're just trying to find one.
Then the Bailey Falters of the world.
Right. Oh my gosh. Well, you know, he needs both. I mean, Ryan Nelson too, right? And we're going to hear Ryan Nelson likely say, hey, I'm focused on this one right now.
I just talked to him.
Right. And he was saying, like, I'm neither a supinator or a pronator, right? We talked about it last week. Which is the funniest
thing. I don't think if you hear about a new changeup from him, I would not put him higher on my list. But if you do hear that he's like throwing a different breaking ball, that might be interesting. Because I think,
and if he's confident, that's a thing that's important to me. If he's like, this is my thing now. Like, I've got, like, because he's been searching and searching and searching, so we should expect him to show up with something new next year, right? And I hope he does for his own sake, you know, because he's gotta. But we don't know. We don't, you know, unless it becomes like a regular thing with him, then we shouldn't really put any stock into that. So it's, you know, those are the two things. Is it something else to pair with the fastball for strikes? And if they already are missing a whiff pitch, if they already have a whiff pitch and they're saying, oh, cool, now I'm also throwing a curve or a sweeper or something, I don't really care, because they still probably have that amazing slider, Dylan Cease. Like, yeah, you're throwing a sweeper more. That's great. But like, it's about the slider still, though. Like, that's not really doing that much of a new thing to change my ranking of you. That's, to me, the biggest, the biggest two things that we should focus on with it. And man, you've really just knocked it out of the park, like listing the guys who had a new pitch. Oh my gosh. Like, I just want you to say it one more time to the camera so then I can just like do the tap the sign in the spring.
In the top 75 pitchers as ranked this year by the Fangraphs auction calculator, 4 or 5 had great new pitches, that we'd say that this is the reason they did this.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, I mean, I'm part of the problem. I got to stop celebrating.
Yeah.
I mean, gotta be like, oh, guys, look, it's the new.
So exciting. It's the promise of it all coming together, you know?
One day. I mean, it's just like, oh, I want him to throw the thing. Is he throwing the thing? Okay, he'll throw the thing. But yeah. These are a
lot. You remember how excited we were about Christopher Sanchez's cutter?
Well, I still don't understand why you didn't throw it more. Nick, you just had like a career year. Shut up.
I know. Yeah, right. He was great. Not because of the cutter.
Okay, we're running out of time here. I don't want to go deep into anything more that you have on your list, but were there other things on your list that you are thinking about?
The one thing I just had circled was like small arsenals. Like, how much should I care? Because I'm struggling with my Dylan Cease ranking.
Aren't we all?
You know, I'm getting heckled online for my Dylan Cease ranking, and
who cares?
Maybe rightfully so, because you know I relied on my models, I relied on K-BB, relied on all the ERA estimators. They all said he's going to be good. He wasn't. He might be good again next year, but so I want to be like, oh, is it because of small arsenals? But Kevin Gausman has a small arsenal. Strider Hunter has a small Green. Arsenal. Jose Soriano, Hunter Green has a small arsenal. Garrett Crochet had a small arsenal to begin the season. Maybe he should be on our added pitches list, except he added those pitches last year. So
yeah,
he's not really in a small arsenal. Blake Snell is not really a small arsenal. He still has three pitches. Shohei Monaga has three pitches. Robbie Ray has been a small arsenal. He added to it this year.
Right.
Tanner Bibee,
go ahead.
In the last month has gotten way better by making his arsenal smaller. He got rid of the sinker and really focused on the fastball cutter or whatever that thing is, slider, gyro slider thing. Right. So, I do think that small arsenals, I should, you know, put them a tick down, but I don't think that I should rank Dylan Cease, you know, 50th next year because he has a small arsenal. I think he'll still be in my top 30 somewhere. He may not be in my top 20 because, you know, this year and because of the small arsenal, but you know.
Yeah.
But yeah. Where do you think you'll put Cease next year?
Don't talk to me about that right now. Give me a week, you know?
Yeah. All right.
The biggest, I think the biggest ones for me are rookies are kind of great in season and we shouldn't really overlook them. There are a lot of surprising ones this year. Cam Schlittler, Ian Seymour. I mean, Parker Messick has done well in this.
They have the benefit of like no one's ever seen their pitch shapes, you know,
so right. And they
some novelty.
Yeah. And we have more data than ever to tell you that this guy's good or not before that happens, which makes the whole tin snap thing kind of not what it was before. And it is a very interesting thing to think about.
I've always thought that the bust rates on prospects and pitching prospects in particular has had to do with the information gap between the minor leagues and the major leagues.
Absolutely agree with that one. Definitely. So
as that narrows, I think hopefully
we'll be much better. Right. And it was really helpful having like, you know, AAA data where we can have PLV utilized with it and our extension numbers and extension and vert and velocity and movement, like we have it all as if they're a starting pitcher in the majors. Like that is absurdly helpful, you know. I don't care what the results were on it, I can just see what the shape of the stuff is, right? Understanding what makes a good fastball, because I'm starting to realize that Zebby Matthews doesn't have a good fastball. I'm like, wait, hold on a second. Oh. Hold on. It's like the average good is not good. You have to have something that's elite. Like it needs to be exceptional, especially if you're young. And that to me is moving into the real big one, the biggest lesson that we didn't even talk about. Left-handers with changeups. We got to care more about left-handers with changeups. It's insane. Okay. Carlos Rodon had his at the end of last year. It was amazing this year with that changeup, right? Robbie Ray, when he has his changeup working, is really good. Cole Reagan's amazing with his. Terry Skubel with his. Oh, yeah. And I just mentioned Ian Seymour and Parker Messick. Like, we saw Mitch Ferris and his sloth ball do well for a start. Okay? Like, lefties with changeups should not be overlooked. And it's something, I mean, you know, look, Ranger Suarez and Christopher Sanchez. It's just, it's endless. Trevor Rogers. I mean, I can keep going, guys. Lefties with changeups are such a massive thing. And it's kind of hard to find one that really failed. And I guess maybe Tyler Anderson, but
But he also throws like 88. So it's
and really also does not have good command. And a lot of these lefties have good command because to be a lefty.
Boyder's changeup was fourth by pitch type values.
Oh, man. It's that is a shift in the game a little bit for my perception here. It looks very boring, but it's like, no, those things work really well. Was there one more in here? Nah, not really. Nah, that's it. Those are the things, guys. Oh, ha. Here's one. Okay. Last thing. I swear. Okay. I am so curious. This is something to hold on for the next podcast. Maybe a couple. I'm curious about the guys who added things changed in season this year that we feel good about for next year. So, for example, Rodon, great example of adding that changeup around like August last year and carrying it over. And who are the guys that did that and we actually believe will carry it with them or not? I think that's a very important conversation to have because you can understand which second half performances are good, which ones are not. And I think we need to have to give more focus to those things because that was a very legitimate thing that could
it's almost like the TJ thing where they demonstrated they already broke out in a way.
Right. This new pitch that was before April.
Well, that's also important because they threw the new pitch in a regular season game.
So yeah, and it worked.
They showed confidence because I mean, even if you ask Jason Collette about this, like Collette has the list every year and it's like 30% of the list actually throw that pitch they talked about all spring.
In
the actual game. Good.
And then they throw it and they stop like Christopher Sanchez and I'm still upset. All right. But that is it for this week. I am really looking forward to our podcast next week. If you can have some preliminary draft, maybe I'll give you 2 weeks if you need it. Let me know.
We maybe should also watch a playoff game together live.
Oh, that'd be so fun. We don't playback doesn't allow us to watch it live. Because it's not MLB.TV. It's with,
but we may have some playoff games to highlight.
Oh, 100%. That'd be the most. We can still host it on playback, just not show you the live feed. I would love to do that with you, you know. Oh my gosh, that would be an absolute blast. All right, we'll say 2 weeks for this thing. 2 weeks. All right, make sure you make a decent rough draft. It doesn't need to be amazing. We'll talk about it. Okay. All right. But that's it for today, guys. Thank you so much to Eno Saris for being my special guest. I went through the Rolodex and I can't believe that landed on you. on behalf of Eno Saris, my name is Nick Pollock. And we'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week.